The Fan on Demand. Have you got game? Got game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, a show by gamers for gamers. Coming up this week, we hit the ice with the first early look at NHL 14. We pull up a chair at the table for Telltale's Poker Night 2, and we dive into the crazy superhero fighting world with a review of Injustice: Gods Among Us.
Have you got game?
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Momin Qureshi, Christine Chubb, Brian Calhoun, all here as per usual for our week of video game goodness.
Because we can't convince anyone else to show up for this thing.
Yeah, we have tried to get other people in here, but it doesn't work.
Got Game? No. I'm not coming on that. Not that train wreck.
Exactly. Well, hey. Most train wrecks don't last 5 years, and we're coming up on 5 years next month. So that is true. Booey to you, as they said in the 1940s. I don't even know if they said that. It sounds like something they'd say then. It's a fun week here on this show. We're very excited because some would argue it's the lead-up to the most wonderful time of the year because the trailer for the new version of NHL has finally come out.
Yay! That's not exactly what I thought you were going to talk about. Because Defiance came out finally.
The TV show?
I thought that was the biggest entertainment.
You know what?
You get the press releases, it's like, here's the biggest entertainment event of the year. No, it's not actually.
Well,
that.
It's interesting that you say that. We'll talk about this in a minute, but I saw a lot of people tweeting about Defiance the game, and I wanted to bring it up with you on the show. People up there love that game. Like, they loved it.
It's not a terrible game, and I tried to get that across in my review. It has its problems with them trying to stretch one idea across so many different narrative mediums. They call it a transmedia event, so you really need to consume the entire package.
If you haven't seen the show, it's tough.
Yeah,
that's such a PR term, a transmedia event.
Yeah,
what does that even mean?
It doesn't mean anything.
Zazz, what is Zazz? But yes, the NHL 14 trailer is out and it looks good. It's not that long. If you want to see it, if you haven't seen it, you can find it on the Got Game blog at sportsnet590.ca. The release date has also been given, and as per usual, it is in September. There's some new stuff in here. I don't know how much they have to change because last year's was amazing. Probably, arguably the best one they've ever done.
I'm a little concerned, though.
Why?
Like, the very first thing in this press release we got about it was this collision physics, right?
Yeah.
That's the idea that they're trying to get into all their games right now, trying to make those collisions a little bit more realistic.
Right, they had that in FIFA.
And they also had that in Madden. And if you remember when I reviewed Madden, the biggest problem with that game was that after every pileup, everybody would try and walk away or walk through the pileup.
Yeah.
And it would cause all these funny moments because people would suddenly just trip over each other and then get right back up, and it was mayhem. The engine wasn't able to keep up with the gameplay, and it just made the game look like a farce. So
I don't know, but I feel like it might work in hockey because hockey is more continuous gameplay, whereas football is play stop. Hockey is more just you're almost not always ongoing, but it's more just long stretches of play.
Unfortunately, it's not something we can like really talk about until we see it at E3 this year.
Exactly.
But what I am excited about is the next point. They're taking the Fight Night engine out of Fight Night Round 4 and pretty much putting in this game, and you're going to have fights now that are like this third person. Basically, it's Fight Night.
Yeah.
Fight Night minigames inside NHL 14.
Which I think is awesome. I love the idea.
Fight Night was such a good game.
Yeah, many of them were. Almost all of them were great games. And I love the idea of bringing that in. They tried to work on the fighting engine. I think it was like 3 or 4 games ago. And it worked okay. But if they could revamp that part of it, it would make, to me, the game a lot more fun.
Yeah.
And people would try to specifically get into fights and stuff like that. And that's cool. And that's one of the things that I've really liked about what EA does is that they share technology. So if it works well in one game and it can be brought to another game, they'll do that. And when we were at E3 last year, that was one thing that I definitely noticed when we went to talk about FIFA. We went to talk about Madden and NHL and NBA Live at the time.
Yeah.
They talked about how much they kind of share interdepartment stuff just because whatever can make a game better, they'll try to do it.
Yeah,
that was cool.
That's why the Midwinter Classic, that's why that was in the game 1 year, because they actually had the license for the football stadium that it was happening at, so they could put it on.
Right.
And isn't the one with the Leafs, isn't that a football stadium?
It's at the University of Michigan football stadium. So if that's an NCAA football, probably they can.
Which it is. Yeah. So whenever that Leafs Midwinter Classic comes up.
January 1st of next year. Yeah.
It's probably going to be in this game, isn't
should
it?
Be. It should be, yep.
That's going to be pretty cool.
That along with the five other Winter Classics the NHL is going to do next year.
Seriously, this game could be packed full of just whole Winter Classics mode.
Only the NHL could screw up something that good. Go on.
It would be amazing. Well, the cool thing, though, about it, about all the sharing physics as well, is that it gives all of the EA games not only the best quality, but it gives you know what you're going to expect in it, and it gives that kind of linearness to your gameplay where it's like, okay, this works well in here, it'll probably work well in this game as well. And it's good. It's just consistency that players really enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. There are some other things they're putting in here. True performance skating back. That was the best part of last year's game.
Yeah, they're tweaking that, which is to be expected. They're not really going to be...
I don't know how much they can actually tweak.
Yeah, 1,000 new skating animations? Yeah. My gosh.
Yeah. So they're just adding to it, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, exactly. One touch Deeks.
I read that paragraph and I wasn't totally sure what they meant.
Yeah. I mean, because Deeks are pretty... They're not that complicated as they are right now. I mean, it does take a little bit of time to master them, but whatever. The live the life feature is interesting.
Sounds like someone on that team's been playing a lot of NBA 2K and going, those player press conferences, we should probably put that in our game. Mm-hmm. That's a cool idea.
So basically, it's a part of, they're going to put it in the be a pro mode. And basically what they're saying is it's going to be your life on the ice and off the ice. And one will impact the other and vice versa. Which is kind of a neat feature. I mean, if you play Be A Pro and you play full seasons and stuff like that, that's kind of cool to work that in.
All I'm thinking, though, at this point, though, is that I really hope it turns out to be like F1 2010, and the interactions you had in that game was you basically doing this first-person view of being interviewed by a cameraman and a reporter. You were literally just, like, your entire screen was you just staring into a camera, which I think is going to be kind of cool. You basically answered multiple-choice questions, and that affected how the news would be for the next couple of days, and that affected how people saw you, how potential sponsors saw you. So that could be a really interesting idea if they put a lot of effort into it. There's so many questions about all this information, which will be answered as soon as we get to see the game at E3. So I don't know what to say beyond that.
Exactly. Now, the NHL 14 cover vote begins on April the 22nd. And if you remember last year, they had a really good play down. And it was really fun last year because a lot of the players got into it and they were tweeting about it. Remember, Scott Hartnell made that video because he wanted to be on the cover.
Oh, that's right.
And ultimately, Claude Giroux won in a final show off against Pekka Rene. And they made the big unveil at the NHL Awards, which I'm thinking they will probably do again when he lugged the big I think it was Steven Stamkos. He was the cover year before, and he lugged the big
I remember that
picture,
like,
of the
6 foot tall
kind of pulled it on the stage, and then they unveiled it. So if you want to take part in the cover vote, April 22nd 2013 is when it gets underway. And that's all we know about NHL 14 at this point, but as you know, if you listen to the show, we'll be all over it and bring you updates as they go along. I'm sure at some point our good friend of the show, Sean Ramjag Singh, will be on here more than a couple times as we get closer to launch date in September. You are listening to Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Just want to let you know two things. One, we have a review of Injustice Gods Among Us coming up in our third segment, and we're going to take you inside the new game Telltale's Poker Night 2 coming up next segment. But for now, do you guys want to talk about FIFA, or do you want to talk about Sony?
I think Sony is probably the biggest story for our listeners, considering just how massive it was, and it really did affect anyone who's playing on a PlayStation 3. Yeah.
Well, the story goes, you may remember if you take a trip with me back through time.
Back to May, or is it March of 2011? I think it was May.
I feel like it was May, because I remember when we went to E3 for my first time, Christine, your first time, Brian, that was your second. One of the things I did when I was doing a story for 680 is I went around and I asked people if it was water under the bridge or if they still cared at all, and I just kind of got a lot of comments. But you'll remember that was the time when Sony had their big hack into their PSN, and it was down for almost a month. It was down for a long time.
I think it was 6 weeks at the minimum. It was longer than a month.
Yeah, it was a long time, and basically they had a hack into their system, and people's personal information was compromised, and people couldn't get onto the PSN, and
literally took down the PlayStation Network for that time period so they could rebuild it from the ground up. That's how massive this was.
Yeah, and it was a big deal. And then when they came back, and remember they offered that sort of thank you program,
or the welcome back package,
where you could download a couple of games for free, and There was some good stuff in there at the time. It was like Infamous 1 was one of them, and there was a few other
Little
ones.
Little Big
over
Planet
there.
Was also in there. Yeah. Yeah, a few good games.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There was a few good games. But the story now is that somebody at the time did file a lawsuit against Sony.
Natasha, I apologize. I cannot pronounce your last name.
Makismovic?
Yeah, that's how it looks like. Max. Imovic. See, now we're just butchering it.
Yeah, I apologize.
Natasha filed a lawsuit.
She lives in Mississauga.
There you go.
She was 21 at the time when she started the lawsuit, and she said, hey, listen, this welcome back package, not good enough for us. We feel that you have some sort of duty to protect our information and that you screwed up doing that. So she started this lawsuit with a local law firm, and they were hoping to get over $1 billion in damages.
Now, what's happening now is that the reports are that they're close to reaching a settlement. I doubt that it's going to be for $1 billion.
Yeah, I doubt it's $1 billion.
But they are close to reaching a settlement. But there's two things here. One is that Sony is saying, yes, we're going to settle, but that doesn't mean that we assume any sort of responsibility and that we didn't do anything wrong. Which, I mean, that's like washing your hands.
Well, it says that they didn't break any laws and they did no wrong. And I agree with the breaking laws part. They didn't break a law.
They didn't break any laws.
The wrongdoing part, though?
The hackers broke laws.
The hackers broke laws. But also, I mean, the companies we give our information to do have a responsibility to keep that safe. And Sony, it was proven at that time that Sony's protection was not up to par.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And even if it was up to par and somebody breaks through and gets it, that's still on you. That's still your problem. I gave you my address and my phone number and my credit card information with the explicit understanding that you would protect it and use it only for the things that I paid for.
Yes, there was a very long "I agree" that I put at the end of your giant statement.
But that being said, I mean, if your goal in this entire situation was to get back at Sony because you felt that they had somehow wronged you, I mean, this is kind of getting back at Sony.
Yeah.
Now, in the end, this is going to be nowhere near $1 billion.
No.
I'd be surprised if the total amount of all this. And we should also say that there's a website out there. It's psn-soe-canadasettlement.com. If you want to know the exact rundown of everything you can get back, all that will be on that website.
And we can put the link up on our Got Game blog at sportsnet590.ca.
Yeah, no, it will definitely be in the Got Game blog for sure. But the point I was getting at was that even though that this isn't going to be a huge amount, Sony hasn't been in a great way financially for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really are kind of on a life raft right now, being held up by the Sony PlayStation brand. So they are going to get hurt by this. Maybe not as much as anyone wants, but this is definitely going to be felt in the halls of Sony for a couple of years to come.
And I think they're settling it now because going into E3 and the launch of the PlayStation 4, they want this over and done with and put to bed. They don't want it anywhere around. They don't want anything to do with this by the time that new system comes out, and preferably by the time E3 comes around in June, because all they want at that point is good press, right?
Mm-hmm,
they don't want
of course.
Bad press. Not that this is making that much like of a big splash of news, but I don't think they want any lingering effects of this anywhere around when the PlayStation 4 comes out.
Well, this got picked up by a couple of websites in the United States, so I mean, it is out there. But yeah, I agree with you. I think the people who are actually doing the legal work for the Canadians involved in this, they are probably ready to move on, and Sony definitely wants out of this as well. And it's not that bad. I mean, it's kind of cool at the very end of all this legal mumble-jumbo. It says that if you somehow were actually affected through financial means by, you know, this entire thing, if somehow your identity was stolen, they will reimburse a lot of money, up to like $90,000. So, I mean, they are actually putting some real hard cash on this. But like I said, go to the website, check it all out. I feel okay about this. Yeah. I don't feel great about this. I feel okay about this.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, right? When you try to fight a major company with lawyers, stuff like this happens. They usually try to settle out of court anyway. We got a lot more to come on this week's show. Next segment, we're going to talk to the executive producer of Telltale's Poker Night 2. And coming up a little later, I'm going to have my review of Injustice, Gods Among Us. My God, that game. That's all to come on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We've got game. Do you in the game?
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Moman Qureshi is the voice you're hearing right now. That's me. There's Christine and Brian across the table from me. Before we get to our interview this week, we want to let you know that if you're a fan of the World Baseball Classic, you can play it on your iPhone.
Ooh.
That's the way it works. There is a Power Pros 2013 World Baseball Classic game now available for mobile devices, put out by Konami. It features many of the real players representing their countries. It's interesting that they put this out like a month after the World Baseball Classic ended. Thanks for the timely release. But if you are so interested, it's out there and you can play it. And now it's time for our interview. It is about Poker Night 2, Calhoun, Poker Night 1, very popular.
I'm very excited about this because, as you say, it's very popular, not because of the poker game in and of itself. I mean, it will be a factual poker game, but it's the character interactions. And the very first poker game had characters like Strong Bad playing poker with Max from
Love
Sam
me
and Max.
Some Strong Bad.
So it's a really interesting mix of characters that I don't think you'll see anywhere else. And the roster for this next game, as we discussed, will be just as interesting.
Well, it comes out this Tuesday, and we spoke to Kevin Boyle, the executive producer of Telltale Games.
Kevin, I'm guessing the question that may annoy you the most, because it's at least the thing that I hear about the most when people talk about Telltale's Poker Night 1, or now Poker Night 2, is a poker game? Why a poker game? And I don't know if that has annoyed you, but all of us jaded video game journalists, we think we've seen it all. We really can't fathom the idea of you guys putting all this effort into a poker game. So I guess, why'd you guys put all that effort into a poker game?
Well, I think, you know, it's certainly not an annoying question. And I think the thing that appeals about it to me and a lot of us here at Telltale is this idea of why you get together with your friends to play poker. And a lot of it's not necessarily about the poker itself. And sure, you know, poker is this great game, but it's really about getting these people together and chewing the fat with people you're interested in hearing from. And so a lot of Telltale's content has always been about characters and telling stories. And in this case, it's bringing an unlikely set of characters together at one table and, you know, playing poker with them, certainly, but also kind of engaging in this odd interaction between these characters from different properties that you might not ever see anywhere else.
And those characters would be Brock Sampson from television, Claptrap from Borderlands, Ash Williams from the Army of Darkness, and Max from Sam & Max. Also, Gladys, will, as far as I understand, will be the dealer in this game. So I guess the next question has to be, how the heck did you convince all those people who own those different IPs to let you guys pull them into your sandbox and play around with them?
Right. So you were mostly correct on the cast there. I'll say that in Poker Night 2, it's Sam from Sam and Max's at the table, although Max is certainly present there. Max is featured in the first Poker Night. And Sam and Max was created by Steve Purcell, who we've worked with a lot. And, you know, he's a great partner to work with, and we love Sam and Max as both kind of a nod to our old school adventure game roots, and as well, you know, having a dog at the poker table seemed like something we couldn't really pass up this time around. For the other properties, though, you know, a lot of it is us thinking about what's going to be a really interesting mix of characters at this table, what's going to create kind of a cool dynamic in terms of their interactions with each other. And then, in addition to that, you know, who are the kinds of partners that we could reach out to who are going to respond to an idea that's maybe a little bit oddball, but something we think is cool. And if we can get them on board with, you know, with the cool factor of it all without sticking the lawyers on the idea as the first step, then I feel like we're halfway there. So we've got, you know, we've got friends at Gearbox, and we've worked with the folks at Valve before, and we reached out to MGM specifically for the Ash Williams character and to Cartoon Network regarding Brock Sampson. And, you know, it really, I think the most difficult part of it, well, it's easier to say this now in hindsight, but the difficult part of it is really getting over that hurdle of, man, how are we going to approach all of these individuals? How are we going to get this all lined up? But when you get into the individual conversations, I think once you can see eye to eye on how this is going to be cool, and what a good treatment of that character it's going to be and how they're going to fit into this thing, it really wasn't as hard as you might think it would be.
Well, I guess when you put, like, say, Gladys and Claptrap in the same room, those two, obviously, they have something in common. But what Ash Williams would talk with Brock Sampson about, I have no idea.
Right, and particularly for interactions that maybe are less obvious, that gives us some great room to play, right? That's kind of what are the differences there, and what, you know, what kind of things might these people get into or might want to compare notes on or something like that, I think is interesting. Certainly the romance angle with Claptrap and GLaDOS being so far out of his league was something we had some fun with there as well.
When you drop stuff like that, now I can't wait to play the game. I should also mention I'm talking to Kevin Boyle. He's the executive producer of Poker Night 2 coming from Telltale. And I should say that there's a couple things I found interesting about the very first Poker Night game, mostly because I don't know anything about poker. But from a technical standpoint, the very first Poker Night game was surprisingly graphically heavy in requirements of like how much processing power you required on your computer to keep it going. Is that going to be the same case for Poker Night 2?
I think it's reasonable to expect a similar requirement to the first Poker Night game. I mean, we do have, you know, these four characters at the table and playing with chips representing their actual totals and adding GLaDOS, the dealer, in this time and Moxie from Borderlands behind the bar to serve drinks when the player orders them up. So, you know, there's a good few characters in there and a pretty detailed environment that we want to, you know, all of which we want to treat in a way that looks appropriate and correct to the individual IPs. Like to have, for example, to do Brock Sampson without the rendering capacity to pull off a good cell shader and outline, I don't feel would ever look quite right. So you know, while we do want to accommodate as low an end as we can pull into the mix, we never want to do that at the expense of kind of the visual fidelity of these characters that we're familiar with and we love. So we have gone so far as to include, you know, iOS in the mix of platforms that you can play this on, iPad and iPhone. So the requirements aren't so intense that you'll need the most bleeding edge machine that just came onto the market. But again, you know, we need to draw the line at a place that can do these characters justice.
Well, it's understandable because I'm sitting here right now. I'm actually looking at the homepage for Poker Night 2, and you can see that Brock Sampson is clearly cel-shaded, or at least has that cel-shaded look to him when you put beside sort of the model for Claptrap, who looks like he just walked straight out of Borderlands 2, and GLaDOS there as well, just popping in and out. And I have to admit that once you look at it, I can see what you mean. But once again, it all comes down to the whole idea of a poker game, and I don't think there's ever been a poker game that's pushed this much that far, so
right,
it's taking
right.
Everybody some time to get over that fact.
You also won't find another poker game out there that can keep the conversation going regardless of, you know, who's at the table still and who's been busted out. And there's a lot going on with Poker Night that's not typical of poker games. But if you start pulling into the mix games that really handle deep conversation trees that can respond to multiple character configurations, you know, poker doesn't typically come up in that list, but in this case it does, and we've done our best to put together some really entertaining and compelling conversation to support and even respond to the poker that's being played. So it is a poker game. It does certainly require more from a processing power than the average poker game, but then again, we're using poker as an excuse to bring a lot of other elements to the table.
Yes, and as much as everyone who at least I've talked to does have that same reaction, everyone also has the next reaction of like, oh, well, look at the lineup they have, and let's see how crazy this is going to get. I can't wait to get my hands on this game. I have to say, though, something that has also equally surprised me is the price point. To me, it looks like you guys have put, well, actually, I was going to say hours and hours and hours, but I don't even think I could put, you know, a number on the amount of voiceover work in this game. And the price point, if I understand correctly, is going to be in the $5 range. How the heck do you guys justify that?
Well, it's really a math problem, right? It's a matter of volume, I guess. And I think that for all that we do put a lot of time and energy into the game, and, you know, we've got a decent-sized team who have been working hard on this thing for a while, the thinking is, you know, price it such that it's not outside of players' expectations for a game of its scope and size. And if people come to the table thinking it's less expensive than it might have been, that's not a terrible thing, and maybe then we're more likely to pick up more people playing it. So we feel like we're in the right spot as far as price is concerned, and we'll see how that works out.
Well, that seems to be a strategy that has worked for you guys in the past with the first Poker Night game, because the low price point was something that actually did encourage me to pick up the first one. I have to admit, though, when I first picked up the game, I was a little worried, and it's not a fear that I'm past just yet. I did play the first Poker Night game, but I don't claim to be any good at poker, so just for people like me who may not play much poker in their life, how worried should I be about my inability to actually play the game that the game is based on?
Well, one of the things we've done in the second game is to to give players who aren't necessarily winning tournaments opportunities to earn these tokens that you'll use to unlock the stuff in the game. So the idea in the second game being there are these tokens you're earning that'll allow you to unlock, you know, chips and felts and additional decks that can address up the inventory, the place where you're playing, in these different themes. And we don't require you to actually win tournaments to earn these tokens. If you're not losing, if you're not the first man out each time you play, you are going to be accumulating these tokens. Another thing we had in the first Pokemon game was when it came to unlocking the items that are available in for the first Poker Night, it was for Team Fortress 2. In the second Poker Night, we've got items for unlock in Borderlands 2 and for PC and Mac, also for Team Fortress 2. The means to get at those is something that players have a lot more control over now with these bounty challenges. So it's not as intensely based on player skill, certainly as the first game, and we set out to make it more forgiving and give the player more control of their own advancement towards unlocking things. So, I mean, it is a poker game. You'll need to be able to play some poker. You don't need to be a great poker player to be able to win.
So that's Kevin Boyle, executive producer of Poker Night 2 for Telltale Games. It comes out on a number of platforms like select consoles, certain mobile stores, and Steam this Tuesday.
Yeah, and I just want to make a quick correction. Now, we talk a little bit about price points in the interview. That price point may not be representative of every version of the game on every platform. That price may fluctuate depending on whether you're doing it on the iPhone compared to, say, Xbox Live. And we didn't get that in the interview, so I just want to make sure that everyone knows that I think I mentioned $5, and I'm not even totally sure that's the price of the Xbox Live version or the PlayStation Network version or the Steam version. So just be wary that it's going to be a pretty decent price, but $5 may not be the exact price.
But it's a game that a lot of people love the first time around, so hopefully they'll love the second time around.
Yeah, and I'm excited, and I wasn't even good at poker when I played the first game, but that's not why you played this game.
No.
It's the interaction between the characters, and the roster of characters they have this time, I think, are better than the first game.
Indeed.
When it was Strombad and the Heavy from Team Fortress
Strong
2.
Bad's in it.
And
I hope he checks his email during the game.
And a few more characters. I think this roster is better.
Still to come on God Game, we're going to have my long-awaited review of Injustice, Gods Among Us, Brian Calhoun Can Hardly Wait. That's all coming up on God Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. We've got game. Do you? Game.
You're back listening to the third and final segment of this week's edition of Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Momin Qureshi. Christine Chubb and Brian Calhoun are with me in the studio as well. Before we get to our reviews, we did want to mention something quickly. Christine, you're a little excited.
I was very excited. On the 15th, Bethesda sent out a tweet basically saying that the team was done with Skyrim, thus answering the question, how long can they put out more DLC for a game that's 2 years old?
About 2 years, according to my watch.
Apparently. So they made a big blog saying they've started it in 2006, and they were officially done with it. They've enjoyed it was fun, and they've moved on. But the next day, they tweeted a strange and mysterious Vine video with no statement. It was just that. And then the day after that, they did the same thing, causing everybody to wonder, what is the next project?
Yeah, and it's interesting because if you don't know what Vine is this social media app that lets you take literally 10 seconds of video, and that's it. And so they tweeted out two 10-second videos. First of all, interesting choice to send it out on Vine.
Awesome.
Secondly, you don't really get a lot from the videos.
No.
But it definitely is like, what's happening? What's going on?
It's enough to pique the interest. And like when the first video came out, it's just it's spiraling barbed wire, and I can't remember what the second image is. And instantly, people were saying, Fallout. It's going to be Fallout. It's going to be Fallout. And one of the guys from IGN tweeted one of the higher-ups at Bethesda saying, is it Fallout? And he wrote back, oh, what, the Vine thing? No guess again. So everybody's like, what is it? And now they're talking maybe it's a new project, because the second video had sunflowers, and they started to burn, and there's a man standing in front of a building, and it's like, well,
it's going to be a Fallout Skyrim hybrid.
Well, yeah, they're like, well, it doesn't look like Prey. It doesn't look like, you know, there's all these different kind of franchises. It's like, maybe this is something brand new.
I haven't been following the story at all, but didn't I hear Shinji Mikami's name attached to this somehow?
I have no idea.
I didn't hear anything about
that yet. That's pretty cool, though, if it is.
It would be awesome.
I'm not totally sure I'm right, but I could have swore that I just heard that. Like, someone said that to me, and I just sort of took it in, and I didn't really like catalog it or anything. I just absorbed it somehow.
And I'm super excited because we're arranging to speak to Bethesda at E3.
Yay!
So I'm hoping to hear what they have to say.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, we will keep you posted on that story as information becomes available.
Bethesda does need like a big game to hide inside the fortress that is their E3 booth. It's always insane. Like most E3 booths are open and spacious, and they have consoles everywhere. You get to the Bethesda booth every year, it's a fort. Walls all the way around. You can't see inside. There's guards at the front door. It's insane.
Yeah, but it's awesome. Insanely awesome. But it's insanely awesome if you get inside. Available and Christine loses her mind. Now we're going to get to reviews, and a game that we have talked about since we first saw it at E3 last year, and we did that podcast that night, and I remember it was the last thing we saw, I think, on the Wednesday, which is day two of E3, and we were all taken by it. It is called Injustice: Gods Among Us. We have talked about it quite a bit, actually, in the last 10 months or so.
This has been a long time coming.
A long time coming.
And it's going to be marvelous.
Oh!
And you want to know what? I can't even take credit for that.
That
was Xander at Joystick. I just tweeted him, and it's like, hey, that's awesome. That's a great headline for your review. Can I borrow that? And he's like, sure, take it.
Wow. That's
what I was holding this entire show.
That is devilishly clever. So if you don't know about this game, where have you been? It's essentially a game made by NetherRealms, who are the people who made Mortal Kombat, and they've taken the DC universe and put it into, if you played the last Mortal Kombat, that's kind of what this game is like. And so it's all the characters, not all the characters, but many of the characters that you know from DC, and many, many of them, Batman, Superman, Green Lantern, Nightwing, Lex Luthor, Wonder Woman, I mean, so many of the big name ones and a few lesser name ones that you know as well.
Who's Nightwing?
Nightwing is Dick Grayson, who was Robin, who leaves to become his own superhero eventually.
Ah, okay.
Now
you learn something new every day.
There you go.
I did have a chance to speak to the creative director of NetherRealms and one of the co-creators of Mortal Kombat, Ed Boon, and we had a really fun chat, and we talked for about 6 minutes. You can find that interview on the GOT Game blog at sportsnet590.ca, and I highly recommend you go listen to it because he talks a bit about the game and their thought process and how they narrowed it down to the characters that they had.
And that fish guy we talked about last week.
Yeah, and Aquaman. And I will tell you, almost unequivocally, he is probably the most fun character to play with.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot on Twitter, too.
He is. And it's funny, because the reason I mentioned the Ed Boon interview is because I talked to him, and I said, I feel like you guys went out of your way to make Aquaman good. And he's like, we did. We just thought, you know, we want Aquaman generally gets a bad rap. He's thought of as kind of a lame character, the guy who lives in the sea, and ha ha ha, how can he fight crime when he's in the water all the time?
His secret power is that he can call a dolphin to... Right. That's pretty much it. He can call a dolphin.
But in this game, he is a badass, and he can give you a licking. He is sweet in this game, as are many of the characters, but admittedly, some of them are just like, it's kind of lame to fight with them. Like,
I hear a lot of people are picking Deathstroke just so they can fire the gun and stand on the other side of the map and just keep you at bay.
Yeah,
sort of,
I mean, Deathstroke,
sort of a cheap way, if you will.
Yeah, that is kind of cheap. I mean, Deathstroke is fun to play with, and a lot of his moves are firing machine guns and using swords and stuff, but he wasn't really one of my favorites. Aquaman was definitely one of my favorites. I like playing with the Flash. Lantern is fun because you can do stuff with his ring. So there's a lot of fun ones. The one thing that really impressed me a lot about this game is single player story mode is fantastic.
Really?
And I did not expect that from a fighting game. Most fighting games that come out with a single story story mode for single player is usually kind of lame and kind of like, well, this is ridiculous. But with this game, it's terrific.
It's good because we talked about it last week too, where it was like, what happens when you get bored with the fighting? And you're like, well, there's a story mode. But I'm glad to hear that that's really good.
Well, I should say, when I said that, that was after going through a lot of content. Mm-hmm. Going through the majority of that content was still awesome. It was just the second time around. That's all I said.
Well, here's the thing. A game like this, whether it's Mortal Kombat or, you know, this game or a Street Fighter or anything, it's usually driven by multiplayer because that's what you want to do. You want to play with people online. You want to play with your friends. You want to play with your family. You want to trash talk. Whatever it is, that's what you want to do. And that is what drives this game. But the single player story mode, which I thought, okay, I'll just try it out to do part of my review. Like, hours later, I'm like, oh my God, this story is so good. I have to keep playing it. And I don't want to give away too much about it, but it is about basically the members of the Justice League are, as you can expect, fighting a team of supervillains, and it's many of the supervillains, like, you know, the big ones like Luthor and Catwoman and Bane, and they've all banded together, and so you're trying to fight them. But then there's multiple twists along the way where at some point you kind of change venues and things aren't what they usually are and they're not what they seem, and then there's double crossing and then you've got to do all the stuff. And so the way it goes is it kind of plays out like one of those DC animated movies, sort of, where you're watching and there's a lot of storytelling between fights. So I'll tell you this, if you get annoyed by cutscenes and stuff, maybe that's a bad thing, because there's a lot of storytelling between when you get to fights, and then you kind of have two or three fights back to back to back, and then they do more storytelling, and then you have two or three fights back to back. But the story is really good, and it comes to the point where I would get to a fight and I'd be like, I don't want to fight. Tell me what happens. Like, get on with it. Like, just what's going on? Then if they find a way to take all the fights out and just make this as a DC animated movie, I would totally get it on Blu-ray and watch it. Like, that's how into it I was.
You can probably do that on YouTube in a week. Like, someone will probably rip all of it.
I've seen it now, but you know what I mean? Like, if they did it, it would be great. If we're going to talk about the actual fighting, it's a lot of fun. It's a really fun game, and they put a lot of time and effort into a lot of different aspects. So each player has a different set of moves that are catered towards what that character does. So obviously the Flash's moves are heavily antiquated into speed moves. The Aquaman's moves are a lot to do with his trident that he carries around. Batman, it's a lot to do with his gadgets that he has.
Does it feel anything like Mortal Kombat?
Sort of, in the sense that it's the same setup and it's the same kind of joystick movements, and you know, it's the same kind of combinations, and it's not as gruesome as Mortal Kombat is. Mm-hmm. Some of it is. I mean, some of the moves are violent, but you don't get to, like in the last one, they had that X-ray thing when you in the last Mortal Kombat where you break somebody and you could see inside their skull. They don't have that, I think that's a calculated move on NetherRealm's part, because it's a superhero thing and kids tend to like superheroes.
You also gotta get that past DC, and I'm not totally sure DC is going to agree with that.
Cool, exactly.
What, you want to break Batman's skull? No.
You know what the thing is, though? In the story mode, some stuff happens, and I'm like, how did DC okay this? Like, some stuff happens, and I'm like,
Did I call it? Do they break Batman's skull?
No, I'm not going to say, but there is some stuff that happens, and you're like, whoa. Like, it's just like, and then you have to fight, and you're like, oh, I got to fight somebody. The story mode I really, really liked. The fighting is really fun, and it does take you a while to master how to do all the moves and stuff and how to do the special moves. So many times when I was fighting, I would pause, and then there's a list of like your moves and a list of the combos you can do and a list of your special moves, and so you've got to take time to do them all. Some players are definitely more fun to fight with than others. This is, brace yourself, Ryan, but Batman was not one of my favorites to fight with.
That's shocking.
Yeah, and Brian can hardly contain himself because he's great to fight with, but there are other players, I guess, with all their superpowers that are a little bit more fun to fight with, and they can do more stuff. And Batman's, you know, he's got a big place in my heart, and he's such a badass, but, you know, he's just not one of my favorites to fight with in this game, which is, you know, it kind of made me sad a little bit when I was playing. I was like, but I like Batman. But the good thing about the story mode is that you kind of have to fight with everybody, because there's different chapters, and different chapters you take on different people. And so at one point I was playing as Joker and I was beating the hell out of Batman. I was like, oh, my heart is breaking. I don't want to do this.
Is there any hints in the main storyline what the future DLC could be?
Not that I saw.
Yeah.
They are releasing a few characters as DLC. Mm-hmm. So, exactly. So I imagine that's probably going to be the majority of it. I guess you could make like another story, but then have to be separate from everything else.
I don't want to take up too much time. I just want to mention there are some other functions to this game which, to me, make the money worth it. They have a Star Labs function where you have to do all these kind of special missions to earn stars and stuff like that. So
kind of like the Challenge Tower from the last game.
Exactly. That's exactly
last game,
like,
being Mortal Kombat 9.
Right. So, you know, you're Superman and you have to Lex kidnaps Lois, and so you've got to do all these challenges to get Lois free, for example. That's one of the things. And then there's this other one where you can fight only villains, or you can fight only heroes, or you have to fight in a mode that where you have to not let your health bar get down to zero, and so you got to kind of keep building it up. And they have all these other modes, and if you add in multiplayer on top of that, to me this is a really well-rounded, really fun game, especially if you're into superheroes, especially if you know a bit about the DC world. And even if you don't, they kind of take their time to explain stuff. Like, for example, in one scene, the Green Lantern will walk up to the Green Arrow, and if you don't know who they are, they'll say, "Hey, Green Arrow," like in case you're wondering, like, who the hell is this guy? Like, "Hello, Green Arrow," even though Green Lantern would never say that to the Green Lantern. It was just for your benefit as the game player. Overall, I loved this game so much. And the single player story mode totally won me over. It's a solid 9 out of 10 for me. Brian, that gives you 2 minutes to review your game.
Okay, that does not give me much time, so I will focus on the major parts. Guacamelee, made here in Toronto by Drinkbox Studios. It's a Metroidvania type game. So basically, you're given a huge open map. You can go pretty much... We can't go pretty much anywhere, but it's not like you're funneled along this one direct path. But the further you get in the game, the more you unlock, like, for example, powers that allow you to open up more parts of the game. So basically, you're searching the map to try and find ways to open up more of the map. You play as this Mexican farmer named Juan, and I don't know how to pronounce his last name in Spanish, but in English, it's Avocado. So guacamole, avocado, this is starting to come together. And you basically spend the entire game trying to track down your love interest, who is the president's daughter. And the game mechanics in and of themselves are pretty cool. You have this ability to change the world you're in from like the living world to the dead world. And as you do that, basically platforms will appear and disappear. So it becomes a platformer. So you're jumping off one platform, hitting the button, change the world. A platform appears where there was none. You land on it. You move on to the next part. Hit the button again, and a wall appears where there wasn't, so you can bounce off that, and that's how the gameplay goes. You can also change into that chicken we talked about.
Yay!
And that has sort of different aspects. You can move faster, you can jump a little higher. You can't jump off a wall as a chicken, though, so, I mean, sometimes you have to go very quickly between chicken and, like, human or living world and dead world. Not why you play the game, though. You really play the game for this, like, the funny, charming world full of funny, charming characters in funny, charming scenarios. It's all about charm. And it's also challenging. The gameplay in and of itself, moving from all those platforms, a lot easier to actually say than it was to actually do. So really challenging gameplay. It helps though that the controls are very tight. So every time I screw it up, it's like, oh, okay, I got to learn how to hit the right combinations quick enough to get myself to that part. It was never that this game's broken. Overall, though, I really enjoyed Guacamelee. If I had, like, one big complaint, it's only about 5 hours. So you're going to put in $12 is the retail price. So $12 gets you 5 hours of gameplay. I really enjoyed my time in there. Like I said, charming people. So if you're looking for a short game with a lot of charm, I highly recommend this. They did go a little bit overboard with the memes, though. Like, the entire game is them in the background. Here is this poster that's supposed to be, like, that really angry cat. Or here's one that's Batman versus Bane, one night only. There's even a reference to Mario at some point. So yeah. I was like, hey, sorry, your princess is another castle. So they went a little bit overboard. At some point, it felt like they were trying too hard. Mm-hmm. But I mean, other than that, there really isn't any reason for you to not play this game if that's sort of the game you're interested in. If you like platformers and sort of Metroidvania gameplay, definitely get this game. I'm going to give it an 8.5 out of 10.
8.5 out of 10 for Guacamelee, 9 out of 10 for Injustice Gods Among Us, and that does it for this week. For Christine Chubb and Ryan Calhoun, I'm Omen Qureshi. This has been Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.